A grant from RE/MAX Realty Associates, currently handling over 30% of the real estate sales transactions in Champaign County. 352-5700. Nobody sells more real estate than RE/MAX, and they encourage you to join them in supporting public broadcasting. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Christie Clinic, with offices in Champaign, Urbana, Rantoul, and Mahomet, providing quality health care to the residents of Central Illinois. Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, homemade pies by Inge, gourmet foods, cards and gifts, as well as creative crafts, Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Nackies, the Bean Scene Cafe, and Prairie Fire Glass, all housed in the same buildings in downtown Monticello.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. It is the first Wednesday of the month, and it has been for a long, long time our habit, pleasure, tradition to talk about cooking on this day, and generally with the same guy, this man that we like to call our official or unofficial or something like that, chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore, and he's been stopping by here once a month on a Monday for a long time, and we always have a good time and pick some sort of a topic, and he picks the topics. We've talked about different, you know, dishes and different approaches to different dishes. We've talked about cooking from different places in the world and different places in the United States, and about how we all go about trying to feed ourselves and our families and put something nice on the table, and sometimes trying to do it with a minimal amount of fuss. So this time around, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about chicken. And he said he'd like to know, what's your favorite chicken recipe? It's very versatile, as we were just here discussing. So if you have a recipe to share with us and with the other people who are listening, that would be great. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Yes, thank you very much.
Before we start here, I have a little old business I need to take care of.
Yes.
And something I've been holding on here from our August show, where we had a cookbook editor on, a woman who had edited a series of books that were collections of recipes for that year. And what they did is they go out and they looked at cookbooks and cooking magazines and put together what they thought were the best recipes. So a couple of things came up, and I don't know if actually this might be even older than that, but on one of our previous shows, someone called in and said they were interested in growing pepperoncini peppers. Another listener who does grow them sent me this information by email, and it's too late to do anything about this year, but if you want to grow them next year, this caller said that he wanted to provide people with the name of a greenhouse where you could buy Hungarian peppers, some heirloom tomatoes, a lot of other unusual things that he said, also some flowers. And this place that he was recommending is the Sunshine Greenhouse and Florist. It's in Springfield at 1736 Camp Butler Road in Springfield. And so if people are interested, they're already, I'm sure people are probably already thinking about what they're going to plant next year.
Oh, yes.
So they can have that. Also, now we tried to stay away from smut on this program, but the subject of smut came up, and someone called in and we had a little conversation with a guest about huitlacoche, mm-hmm. and said that this listener wanted people to know that it is possible to buy it in a can if you thought you'd like to try it. And his suggestion was, and there's an online seller that's called gourmetsleuth.com, said you can buy a 7.5-ounce can of corn smut for only $5.85. So if that's something that you would like to try, you don't have to know a farmer who can get you some out of the field. You can actually buy it in a can. So there we have it. That's what we've been doing while you've been gone.
maybe I should run away more frequently.
No,
get lots of good information. Yeah. Oh, I'm images in my mind of my uncle's cornfield and their great angst and sorrow at it being covered with smut. And, oh, ruined, you know. And no one had even heard about eating it. Of course, that's 1935, but that was just an image in my mind.
Okay, anyway, so about chicken.
Good, here we are. Well, yes, while I was gone, I did a big Indian dinner in the Gujarat style of cooking, and I used chicken for one of the dishes in that, although Gujarat is mostly vegetarian. There are some meat dishes. I did chicken for that because my friend likes Indian style of chicken, so mm-hmm. I did that. I was thinking about, gosh, well, I haven't done that very often. It's one of my favorite things to do. And then I come back and I'm making some other chicken recipes. And then just Sunday, friends and I went out for lunch, and we each got a different chicken dish. And I thought, there were three dishes, and there were at least six dishes that you could have had of chicken, and none of them were fried chicken. And that I thought, well, you know, we've changed our emphasis on chicken, both in public eating and our own homes. It's not just a roast chicken every Sunday, as it used to be for so long, or even a chicken in every pot. Or was it two chickens?
I think it was two.
Two chickens.
That was supposed to be a sign of great prosperity.
Yes,
two chickens. I don't know. Maybe it was
two cars in a garage. I'm thinking the same thing, too. So whatever it is. But I thought, and we have talked about chicken before, and we had so many callers, and I thought, well, I like this subject, so let's find out what people are thinking about chicken. And I brought my favorite recipes.
Well, you know, I don't think I give you the phone number, as if people don't know it by now. 333-9455, if you're in Champaign-Urbana, where we are. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, it's certainly very versatile. You can do a lot of things with it.
More than you would think. Almost every manner of cooking you can apply to chicken.
Yeah.
You know, frying, sauté, poaching, roasting, baking, and everything in between.
Yeah. And it seems to me that one of the things that now you can get really easily that perhaps at one time wasn't all that easy to get, and I see in a lot of recipes, is the skinless, boneless chicken breast.
Yep.
So it's just a nice piece of white meat that you can do. You can cut it up. You can cook it that way. You can cook it whole if you make sure you don't overdo it. And there's lots of things you can do with it. And it seems to me that, you know, going back, you could get the various parts, but everything was always on the bone. I don't know when it became so popular and so accessible that you could get that cut that way.
Not, well, at least 7 or 8 years, which isn't very long.
In food years,
isn't very long that they have done that. It has been done as a convenience. Also, I think it's when they started cutting the chicken up and selling sacks of legs, sacks of thighs. Then you had sacks of breasts, and then some places you even have backs and necks. So when you started grouping the chicken parts instead of here's a whole chicken, and I suppose that has caused some people not to know how to cut up a chicken properly. There are two or three ways to do it, but that you just don't have to do it.
Yeah,
main thing.
And I think if you get it's one of those things that if you once you know how to do it, it's not that difficult. But if you've tried it, it's hard. And my experience is that unless you're Martin Yan, you know, you can do it like he does in a minute or something.
Oh yeah, he just whacks it across the bone.
It's amazing. I've seen him do that, and it just scares me. But unless you really know how to do it and you do a good job, at least my experience is you end up with an awful lot of meat still stuck to the carcass. You don't get the meat. I suppose you could then take that and make stock with it, and that's fine. But to get a really good job, it is something you kind of have to practice.
Yeah, you do it to practice, and of course they've got the right shapes of knives and such for cutting and filleting and all that sort of thing. I find sometimes it's very convenient. I keep thinking, come on, you're paying this much for a skinned one, and you can buy another one right there, and all you have to do is peel the skin off and rip it off of the bone. But then I sometimes just don't want to. I want to get to it, so I will buy the skinless. And there are some recipes and some cultures that don't just take the feathers off of a chicken, they skin the chicken. And so a lot of recipes that are dealing with certain areas will want a skinless chicken. This is already done for you. Mm-hmm. And I was very surprised. Little scrawny chickens, they were just peeled off and no feathers, no skin, no nothing. And then that's where you start cooking from. And some people like to do that. So I suppose it suits our needs.
Okay.
It's very handy. As long as we're waiting for somebody else's recipe, I'll give you a very quick one that I like and do start with already breasts that are skinless and boneless. And then you put them between leaves of saran wrap and just pound the heck out of them with an iron skillet or an iron enameled iron pan, something that's heavy. Mm-hmm. I don't have one of those elegant little
whappers. There are special things
whappers.
For that. Yeah,
yeah, special little mallets of some sort that are big and wide and flat and heavy. But I just use the pan that's always hanging up there and flatten the chicken breast out to where it's only about a quarter of an inch thick, and then quickly fry that or saute it in – actually, it's fried – in the chicken. I put in butter and because the butter browns a little bit. And that's fried for 4 minutes on each side.
That much?
No, 2 minutes on each side. Mm. 2 minutes on each side. I had to think about that. And it curls up just a little bit and gets white around the outside edges instantly. And it's not a scallopini, but it's like that. And thinking off the top of my head right now, when you're cooking chicken, you either cook it quickly or a long time. In between, it is tough. Mm-hmm. And so yes, it is 2 minutes on each side for the chicken. And then I squirt lemon juice on top of that, and it turns brown as well, like it did when you wrote secret messages with lemon juice, remember? And then heated them over a candle, and then they would show up. Well, that's why I think of that every time that I do that chicken recipe. Oh, the fourth grade was wonderful, wasn't it?
I don't recall.
I do.
Oh, okay.
I do. Anyway, then that's done in 4 minutes. And meanwhile, I've cooked another vegetable that takes 8 minutes. And so in 8 minutes of cooking the vegetable and 4 minutes of cooking the chicken, and you collapse those two together, you've got dinner in 8 minutes.
Can't beat that.
You can't beat that. And boy, is it tasty. Boy, is it tasty. And then the lemon juice and nothing else. I mean, just lemon juice. Maybe pepper if you need it. But the chicken is so good. And then no one believes it. I just walked in there and 8 minutes later, it's on the table. You know, I like to cook that one very much. I invented that one day. I would walk down the hall at school, and I would see somebody. I'd say, "You want to come over for supper?" "Yeah, why not?" "Okay, see you in 30 minutes." And then I would run to the grocery store and get green peppers and chicken and fruit, and then run home and pound it out and start cooking the peppers and start cooking the fruit, poaching either apples or pears. So they were cooking all during the time that I was fussing around, and also while we were eating, and then had just the sautéed peppers that need to be burned just a little bit, and the chicken, and then maybe a green salad if I wanted to have that much more time, and then get the poached pears and the apples, and then cook that juice down real fast, pour it over. Supper was done, and it was like, oh, what? Hey, you've been working? No, I wasn't going to do it until I saw you in the hall. So one of my tricks. I like it.
Right. The man here is the guy we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore is his name. And monthly, he's been stopping by here the first Wednesday for a long time. We talk about cooking and exchange, exchange stories and cooking tips and recipes. And this time around, he said he would like to know, what's your favorite chicken recipe? So if you're out there and you have a recipe to share, give us a call, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. At any point here, you can call in, share it with the other folks who are listening.
Good enough.
aside from that, see, that's really simple, and it's a fast cooking mm-hmm. recipe. How do you roast whole chickens much?
Yes, I like to do them in Elizabeth David style, who's an English cook who cooks French, provincial French. Because instead of just taking the chicken and putting it into the oven and turning it up to 350 and then coming back and looking at it, she cooks it at 450, which is very hot. Mm-hmm. I mean, real, real hot is 500. And it is roasted for an hour, and that is it. And she doesn't put anything else with it, but it is cooked very fast and very hot. And that makes a very, very tasty dish of a roast chicken. But, oh, dear, God bless her. I'm thinking about Julia because she was doing – we saw some of her repeats, you know, within these last few weeks. Mm-hmm. And she was roasting a chicken. She says, this is an awful scrawny little chicken, but it'll cook fast, you know. So but for cooking like that, a nice big, fat, plump, whatever – will cook quite well, and it is always so delicious, because it's crispy on the outside, and it's cooked done, because 400 will cook it very well in an hour, and especially in a convection oven that has heat whirling around it all the time.
We have some callers.
Great.
Let's talk first with someone in Downs, line number 4, first caller right here. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Do you make a Basque chicken?
Oh, no, I don't. That's one of the mysteries of cooking that I have never gotten into. I've tried to eat it a couple of times when I'm in Idaho, and it's exotic and completely confusing because no one will make a Basque cookbook for me to look at.
Well, this is something that is often in bistros in France, and I don't know how authentically Basque it is, but I have a recipe.
Yes, please.
You need a couple of hot chilies, like jalapenos.
Hot chilies, yes.
A cut up chicken.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
3 to 4 tablespoons of vegetable oil.
Yes.
12 nice fat garlic cloves peeled
garlic.
And thinly sliced.
Garlic cloves sliced. Mm-hmm.
2 pounds of red peppers.
2 pounds of red peppers, okay.
Cord seeded and thickly sliced.
Sliced, yes.
The more authentic recipe has a couple of 6 slices of prosciutto in it. I usually leave that out because I don't think it needs it, but it is kind of yummy. You cut the peppers into thin slices. Brown the chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And then add all the peppers and the
garlic
and the ham if you're using it.
And when do the hot chilies go in?
Same time.
Yeah. Garlic and prosciutto and the red peppers. Okay. Okay. That's on top
and
of the chicken.
I turn the top of the chicken. You know, the skin side, I skin it, but that's just I usually skin chicken. Put the public side down and kind of shake the pan a little bit and get everything to settle down inside. Cover and cook over fairly high heat, a medium heat, not high, but it always seems high to me when I'm doing it, until the peppers are very soft.
Okay, soft peppers, yes.
An hour. Check it from time to time to make sure it isn't brown, you know, isn't burning on the spot, and turn the heat down. While that's cooking, heat another tablespoon of oil in another skillet and sauté a couple of large sliced onions.
Oh, okay.
And 2 pounds of tomatoes or a large can of tomatoes.
Okay, tomatoes and onions, yes.
Uh-huh. And just cook that down until you have a sauce and serve the chicken and the peppers on top of that tomato sauce.
That sounds good, and the hot chili is a nice taste.
It is.
To that. I think I would like the prosciutto ham too.
Oh, it is good.
Oh, I would think that would be a neat taste. And if you just can't do it, you know, I'd throw some good heavy bacon in.
See, this is sort of I've turned it into an everyday dish, and so
wow.
But it's a nice thing right now because the red peppers.
Red peppers are such a flavor, aren't they?
Plentiful, and I've come to think of green peppers as simply being a green red pepper.
Well, it is.
It is.
It is. But there is a different taste to a green pepper.
Yeah.
It's a different taste. And some of my friends cannot eat green peppers, but they'll eat red. Mm-hmm. They can eat red peppers. So I keep away from green peppers with some people, except I can substitute poblano. For some reason or other, they can eat the poblano, but they can't eat the green. So in case you want to add an extra pepper to it, throw in a poblano.
I would not substitute green.
You would not?
In this recipe, no. Because
red peppers, okay.
The red has more juice.
Yes, it does. They are fuller, aren't they?
And it will, as it cooks down, it exudes that liquid, and you need it.
Now, this recipe is very, very, very similar to a Hungarian style of paprika chicken. The only thing that is missing from this recipe is 3 tablespoons of Hungarian red pepper.
Hmm.
And I have that recipe. I was going to give it later, but I'm interested in the fact that every one of these things is exactly in the same order, including the onions and the tomatoes at the end.
Well, that's interesting.
And the peppers, and I don't put garlic in it, and the hot chili, but then add 3 tablespoons. That's an awful lot. But when you're doing the onions, add 3 tablespoons of Hungarian paprika. And I think that probably does what you like about the red peppers, because that the paprika is a very, very heavy red pepper taste.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. Well, thank you. A Bosque chicken.
And
I like
that. Can I suggest that when you do your chicken sauté,
yes,
after you're finished with it, throw some thinly sliced fennel.
Ooh, fennel.
In the pan and sauté it up really quickly. Add a handful, 2 handfuls of halved cherry tomatoes or grape tomatoes.
Yeah. Oh, do you
and
like
some green olives?
You like those little grape tomatoes? I do.
And just heat those through and make a little sauce.
Yes. And
yummy.
Olives. And then that that's going to mix with the other onions and tomatoes later.
No.
I'm talking about only
sauteed chicken breast.
Only the chicken breast.
Yeah.
Oh, my pounded chicken breast.
Yeah. Chicken breast.
Oh, yes. Oh, fennel and tomatoes and olives. Yes, indeed.
After you take them out of the skillet, just cook those up quick.
That sounds
quick.
I'm going to work on that. Thank you very much. Oh, that's good. I got
you. Okay, well, thanks. Thanks very much. And I presume that what she's talking about is the fennel, like the fennel bulb that you,
yes,
like the Italians like to use.
Yes.
That's a sort of a crunchy, kind of licorice-y tasting.
It's very licorice-y.
Deal.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, very good. Well, let's talk with some other folks here. I think the next caller in line, it would be in Charleston and on line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have another recommendation for your pounded thin.
Oh, good. Okay.
Skinless, boneless. This actually came to me from my mother, and I'm going by memory, so it's a little bit vague, but I do make it occasionally. You, depending on how many people you're cooking for, you just select the correct number of boneless chicken breasts.
Yes.
And get your big fat frying pan and pound them out thin.
Pound them out thin.
Then they are spread with a little Dijon mustard.
Uh-oh, yeah.
Some Italian spice, Italian herbs, and mozzarella cheese.
Oh.
A little salt and pepper. And then you roll them and fix them with a toothpick.
Okay.
Then they're browned in... I use olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
Once they are browned and you see the mozzarella start to ooze out a little bit, and you know they've heated through, you remove them from the heat, set them aside into a dish. Then in the same olive oil, and perhaps add just a touch more, throw in a quarter cup of chopped spring onions, green onions, scallions, caramelize them a bit. And then about 8 Roma tomatoes, which have been just quickly parboiled to remove the, so the skins will peel off.
Okay, you want, they want to be peeled, okay.
Yeah, and peeled, and then I squeeze them to get all the seed and juice. It just sort of will all squirt out that way. Then that goes into that, to the pan, which has all the drippings from the chicken and the scallions.
And the onions, yes.
And onions. Heat that up a bit. Half a cup of white wine.
Half a cup of wine, yes.
Or vermouth, if you prefer.
Mm-hmm.
And then half to three-quarter cup of sliced mushrooms.
Oh, okay. Sliced, yes.
So you have the tomatoes in there heating up, and salt and pepper to taste. Then after that is kind of all just heated up together, the chicken goes back in, and sprinkle, you know, another maybe quarter cup of mozzarella cheese over the top of that, and just let it all warm up in the pan and serve away.
That sounds great. What is that called?
My mom's chicken.
Rolled up chicken. Mom's chicken.
Mom's
could come up with a fancier name for it, but yeah, it's.
What are those rolled roulades? Roulades are, but they're generally beef and veal, and I think some of them are even called veal birds.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, what can we call a chicken? A chicken bird.
Chicken bird. Isn't that redundant?
That sounds awfully good. I especially like the addition of the mustard. I like the mustard and the herbs and the cheese, and that's all rolled up. That'd be very, very savory. And then these other things are rather soft, and so you've still got that very, very spicy taste with this soft sauce that is around. That's great.
It's all caramelized just nicely. It has a very, very nice flavor.
That's a good recipe. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
Like that a lot.
Enjoy.
Mom's chicken.
There are probably a lot of things you could do also that way with your pounded. Is it now reminds me of a chicken roulade. I haven't made it in a long time. I should go back and dig out that recipe that had a filling. You did that same thing. You pounded out the breast, and then you made a kind of a filling. And as I recall, it had things in it, like maybe it has some olives, and maybe it had some sun-dried tomato. And probably some herb, maybe some basil or oregano or something like that. And then you did that same thing. You rolled them up, and then you fry them, brown them on the outside in a skillet. And I think then you had to finish that in the oven for a little bit just to make sure that it got cooked through. Or maybe you did that and then you set them aside and then you made a pan sauce and then you poured that over. And as I recall, it was really good. I need to work on my chicken pounding skills. Other than that, I think I had a little tough time getting them pounded out.
Well, I have a little saucepan, the enamel covered iron saucepan, that with a handle, it just boy, you can
bang
away.
I should try. I have one like that too. It's a little Le Creuset pan.
Yes, exactly.
And I think
exactly.
It's only about a 6-inch pan.
That's
or
the
something.
One. That's
okay.
It.
Well,
that is it.
That's going to be now my chicken pounding pan.
And what you do is you tell your friends in the next room, "Don't worry, everything is all right." Then you
wham,
just bang
wham.
The heck out of it.
Okay.
But it's worth it.
All right. Well, I'll get right on that. Line two, we have another caller here, Urbana. Hello.
Doyle?
Yes.
I am tempted for years. I call you once in a while, but people seem to recognize my voice. I always remember that you're from Oklahoma.
Right.
And my husband and I are from Arkansas. My husband's from Northwest Arkansas.
It sounds like maybe your radio is turned.
Yeah,
if you
turn
can.
It off.
Yeah, thank you.
We had some friends here, and they left. They were waiting to hear me on the radio. listen, I may have to put my husband on, but do you remember the days when you had to wring the chicken's neck in the backyard and pick it yourself? My mother had to go out and wring the chicken's neck and clean that chicken. Now, people don't realize how spoiled they are. The other thing I want to say to you is when I was dating my husband at Northwest Arkansas, he'd walk into the kitchen, and his mother would be cooking chicken in one recipe or another. And he'd walk over to the stove and dig out the chicken leg and suck on that wonderful flavor of a chicken leg. And I'd look at him and I'd think, what in the world am I marrying?
Now, you mean the leg or the foot?
The leg, oh, the foot.
It the foot, yes.
Yeah, that's what he said. Just
that's because his mother was doing the cooking. Mothers always cook chicken feet. And then they're the only ones that get to eat them. And I never got to eat the chicken foot. I never got to do that. Mother always, it was sort of, you know, oh, I don't think you want this. It was because she wanted it.
Yeah. It was back in those days. But you've brought up so many things from your life in Oklahoma.
Yes.
That have reminded us of our lives, too. We're up here in Illinois, in Urbana. My husband's a fisheries person, and we like to get your program. Now, years ago, you gave out the recipe if we called the office.
Yes.
They don't do that anymore.
Well, no, you can still do that.
Oh, yeah, we do.
But you can still get the recipes that will be written down, and somebody will transcribe this show and have the recipes put out, and you can still get it from them, but you also can get them off of the web.
I hate the web.
Then you just call in. You just call Dee at the front desk and you send me those recipes for today, and they were this and this and that, or else whatever the day was, and you will get them.
All right. Well, they
guaranteed.
I was scribbling them down, but I didn't think I did a good job.
Well, there is someone who works special to transcribe these pieces for us, so it's very helpful.
Doyle.
Yes, well, thank you.
In the past, and I know you were getting some more phone calls, but we have the book that has your life here in Urbana, what you've done in the past with cooking and your friendships and your art, and no one knows when they call in what all you have offered our community. Okay, I'll call and request the recipe.
Yes, you do that.
Hang in there.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
We do have recipes written up. Sometimes I do want to say to folks that sometimes it takes us a little time to do that. And I think our intent was, yes, that we wanted to have that on the website. And I'm not sure we've done a very good job of getting the stuff on the website.
But they're collected somewhere.
But we do, yes. They're transcribed. Eventually, after the show happens, they're transcribed. I'm sure they're in some computer hard drive somewhere. I think we've got somewhere we've got everything that we have done. And in fact, we're going to have a fun drive, you know, in the fall. And Doyle has suggested maybe as a special kind of a thing, as an incentive to get people to contribute, we could once again do a little recipe compilation.
Indeed.
So we're going to do that. So
I wonder who gets
to
do that.
Who gets to do that? You got to dance with the one that brung you.
That's
so
right.
I guess that would be you.
I guess so.
All right. Well, our man here is the guy we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Morris, whose name. He is here on the program with us once a month, and we talk about cooking. It's always the first Wednesday, and we've been doing this for a long time. And we always have a good time talking about food and places that we've been and dishes that we have had and exchanging recipes. And sometimes one of the most interesting things is when you take something that's very basic, kind of a basic thing, and then you get people talking about how, well, when I grew up, we did it this way, or, well, I do it this way. And somebody else
exactly.
comes and says,
exactly.
well, you know, I do it this way. And you can see all the different twists and different kinds of variations you can do with something that is really kind of basic. But you start to see, well, gosh, you can take that in all kinds of different directions. And so it all depends on how you was raised, I guess.
Well, the last caller sparked some memories. She said, because I'm sort of laughing, like, no one knows how to wring the neck of a chicken. Boy, I do. I was when we lived in Denver, outside of Denver, in 1943, Daddy decided we were going to raise chickens. Well, there was no way of eating if you didn't have something to eat because it was still during the war. So we raised chickens. And, of course, it ends up being me who takes care of them and all. And my father gave me instructions one day on how to properly wring the neck of a chicken so that it was done with dispatch and carefully done. And then I became the one who did all the butchering of the chickens. And Mother heated the water for me. I could have done it, but I was out chasing the chickens. And I ended up doing all of the cleaning. I am really good at cleaning chickens. And I did that, and we put them in the freezer and had the chickens in the freezer for whenever we would need them or sell them to people if they wanted some or whatever. Yes, I do kind of know a little bit about taking care of chickens as a 10th grader in Denver.
That is one thing that I'm sure lots of folks would experience they would not have, you know, having grown up in the city where you went to the market and you got the stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of starting with a live chicken. I wouldn't exactly know what to do.
Well, instead of getting all anxious about it, it was necessary. So you dismissed the matter of, oh, I don't want to do this. Oh, I can't do that. No, you did it. Or you weren't going to eat. And boy, and we would have two chickens every once in a while. And I was laughing because yes, you do have the feet, and the feet are boiled and then they are peeled of that yellow crust that the foot has. They're peeled, and so you're clear down to some nice gelatin. Mm. And Mother would gnaw on those, and I would never be allowed to eat them. Neither was I ever allowed to eat the wishbone because Daddy got the wishbone. I mean, there were parts that were specific to specific people. And it took me about 30 years to learn that the back has two of the most delicious little piles of meat in the center of the back. And again, that was Mother's property. And I think that that's one of those things that mothers just don't tell anybody because, oh, you won't like this. And they know that they're the best pieces of the chicken. I believe the French call them the oyster. It's a little tiny. Uh-huh. It's centered in the middle of the back on the top. And you pluck those out and they are just exquisite. Boy, as soon as I found that out, I start diving for the back. Oh, dear. Well, that's what you get when you're in the 10th grade and you're raising chickens.
We have about 15 minutes left for all those
chicken there's some more chicken recipes
pluckers
out there.
333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, do you have another recipe that you wanted to?
Yes, I want to give my you ask about Elizabeth David, mm-hmm. and I have a recipe of hers that I love to cook, and I just did this for a friend's 75th birthday. Only I varied it this way: instead of roasting the chicken, which is the beginning of this recipe, and then cutting it up and then saucing it. I used rock Cornish hens and split them down the middle of the back with my new poultry shears from Bed Bath and Beyond, by the way. Boy, do they work. You just can snip out that backbone and then turn the rock Cornish hen flat, and they cook a lot faster. If you want to, you cook them upside down. For
with the
a while.
Skin side
yeah, the skin
down.
Side down. And then you can turn them over and finish them brown on the top. And I also do them at 450 for an hour. But then there is this sauce, and this sauce is just wonderful. I'll try to get it here. Let's see. Some butter and 2 level tablespoons of flour and 1/4 pint of stock from the giblets. You can do that with if you want, 4 tablespoons of white wine and 1/2 pint of thick, fresh cream, 2 teaspoons of French mustard, except when I first read this recipe, I put in 2 tablespoons, and I still make it heavy with Dijon mustard. And then 1 teaspoon, only I use at least 2 tablespoons, of fresh dried tarragon, and asked for 2 tablespoons of Gruyere cheese, and I put in at least a cup. So I kind of push it a little bit. So what this is a white sauce that you can see you're making it with the flour and the stock, and then white wine will freshen it up. And you cook that for a bit, and then you put in a half pint of whipping cream, and then the mustard and the tarragon and the cheese, and then you let that meld and cook for a while. So you want to cook that while you're roasting the chicken, and that sauce then, after you have roasted the chicken to what you want, you can either leave them whole or you can fold them back around so that they're a nice little piece, and cover that with the sauce and pop that back in the oven so that it's sort of the sauce sort of wants to bubble and maybe brown just a tiny bit on top and look really warm and tasty. And that I just can't believe how wonderful the cheese. The cream, why not? Cheese, cream, and butter, and tarragon are on the top of a chicken. It is divine, absolutely wonderful. And then that's all there is to it. She calls that, and I love this, because I've cooked it for several very special events. And, of course, when you give anybody the name of the recipe, it's what? It is poulet au gratin à la Savoyard.
What?
Huh? It is so good. But that is a Elizabeth David French provincial cooking recipe. I learned it in England, where this book comes from, and I have made it since 1972 regularly. I love that recipe. I just can't get over that wonderful taste of that sauce, because it is, the sauce is everything. Mm-hmm. The sauce est tout.
Okay. Let's talk with someone
else.
In Urbana, line one, right here. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I actually just started raising chickens last year.
Good.
And one thing I found is not all chickens are created equal.
No, they aren't.
And I found that actually, there's really no comparison between a store-bought chicken and a freshly raised.
One that pecks on the ground, you're right.
Right, and probably one of the better ones I found for cooking would be the Cornish Cross. The birds we have, they seem to get up to a live weight of almost 10 pounds.
Yeah, what are they crossed with?
Well, they call it a Cornish cross. I'm not sure. You know, I think they call them jumbo cross, but I'm not exactly sure what the parent is.
What color are they?
Well, they're white.
Oh, they're white.
Yeah, big white chicken. And actually, you know, it's interesting. You can pick these things up early in the spring at Farm and Fleet and raise them yourself.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
If you don't buy them, you know, at the farmer's market or something like that, you're always free to go out and raise your own.
Well, that's exactly it. I'm trying to remember. I think that we had a cross chicken. I believe it was a Rhode Island Red crossed with a rock Cornish hen. I believe they were called New Hampshire Reds.
Mm.
Nice, big, plump chicken, a little bit lighter color in the feathers, but a really suitable chicken. I'm still back in Denver in 1943.
Well, the meat is so much different in that, you know, you really do get light and dark meat.
Oh, yes.
In a real chicken, as opposed to the farm-raised birds that... seem to, you know, be 25% fat, and
well, they don't get to go anywhere.
Right. But you know, it just seems that the chicken makes a lot of difference. You have a lot of great recipes, but
now we have a supply of farm raised chickens here in Champaign at the farmers market.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so look for those people that are selling the farm raised chickens. There's 2 or 3 groups of people that are selling them there.
Yeah.
Nope. But you're right. And everyone seems to have a theory as to why those chickens that peck on the ground are better. But and I'm not sure what it is, other than there's more of a variety, and there's a little more directness to the diet, rather than something out of a bag that might be controlled one way or another and does nothing but add a lot of meat on it for farm raised.
I've heard of people wringing a chicken's neck. I use an axe myself, and I understand you're supposed to do that to bleed the bird properly. So I'm just wondering how a neck wringing would actually.
Oh, neck wringing is even better.
Really?
Oh yeah, because it's cleaner. And then what I'm able to, what I developed was I keep the chicken under my arm, so that it doesn't flop, and then I hold it, and it does a very, very, very good job of bleeding.
Oh.
And then it doesn't bounce on the ground, and it doesn't get bruised. So I learned how to tuck it under my arm, and you have to twist it with a 180-degree turn. You know, it's complex.
I appreciate but it's very all the very clean. Interesting things I learn on this show. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Right. Thanks for the call. You just never know what it is we're going to be talking about here on the show. Now, if you told me, Dave, when I got up this morning, you were going to go in and you were going to be talking about wringing chickens' necks, I would have said no.
No.
Come now. Focus 580, we're pacifists. We don't believe in stuff
well,
like that.
Well, I'm sorry. I hesitate talking about that because it is repulsive to some people. But like I say, when you're hungry and you're eating and that's the way you do it, that's what you do.
All right. Well, we have time for maybe one or two more callers if people want to call in and share a recipe with us. We've been talking here this morning about chicken, and Doyle Moore, our guest here, said one of the things he wanted to talk about was, well, you know what, do you have a good chicken recipe that you'd be willing to share? 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Got anything else?
Well, let's see. Anything else about the chicken stories? Yes, kind of. Still back in Denver, I had these chickens in a freezer. It was the first before home freezers existed. We had public freezers, mm-hmm. And I remember taking them to school to be sold for war bonds and stamps. We would have auctions, and you would buy something, and so. I supplied for war stamps and bonds. I supplied chickens for them to sell. Oh, and my teacher was so excited because she wanted to buy the chicken. Well, it wasn't available.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was what we did.
Okay. Now we are getting some more calls. Let's talk with someone, in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I just have to add one more comment about butchering chickens.
Yes.
My father would hang them by their feet from the clothesline.
Yes.
A whole string of them, sharpen up his butcher knife, and just go along and one whack took off the head, and they bled very well.
That's exactly it, and they didn't flop around.
Right. They didn't get dirty.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's the way it's done. That's one of the ways. Exactly. Oh. Well, good.
Right.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Let's go on here. Line number two. This is Urbana. Hello.
I'm on again.
Yes.
And I'm gonna turn my radio off. My husband said that he wanted to know if any of your relatives said the best piece of the chicken is the last one over the fence. The tail.
Well, they never necessarily said that, but we always made jokes about it because sometimes. That's called the Pope's nose.
The Pope's nose.
And sometimes called the bishop's nose.
Oh, yeah.
And the funny thing is it does look like a bishop's mitre.
Oh, really?
Well, the tail is shaped like a bishop's mitre. So, yes, it was the piece that went over the fence last.
Well, I'm sorry my husband had to miss all that because I had to turn the radio down. Doyle, I've known you. You probably recognize my voice, but for herbs. The herbs
is oh, yes.
But I found the book and the reference. Nina Rubel wrote you up years ago.
Yes.
How many years have you been in this community?
Since 1959.
59. Well, we came in 73 or something, or 75. Larry's looking at me.
We've been here that long.
But anyway... That was a wonderful book.
Yes, it is. It's Heartland Beat.
Heartland Beach.
Yeah, and she wrote a lot of articles in the newspaper.
Right.
And then they published the book, which were based on all of those articles. And much to my amusement, I know Nina rather well. Much to my amusement, she told me, within the last year, of course, that book is now used as a textbook on how to write interviews and such. And the one that they liked the best was the one that she did for me.
Oh.
Well, my feeling about Nina and her writing was that no one ever wrote as well as she did. And I approved of every word she said. So look that up. It's Heartland Beat.
I have it right in my hand.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at one more for people not about food. Hidden Treasures. The little boys that made sand castles in the bottom, in the basement of their house. The whole book is absolutely, as you say, she did wonderful.
Oh, it's good writing.
Did you say she's still alive?
Oh, yes, she is indeed.
Okay.
And she has twin grandchildren.
Oh, that's...
So wouldn't that make her happy?
I hope she's going to cook a chicken tonight for them.
That's good.
Well, I'm going to write and get your recipe.
Okay.
And it's good you have this program. Hang in there.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Well, I think for this time around, we're about finished. Any last thoughts you'd like to leave with people?
Yes, I have a last thought. I know what we're going to talk about already next month.
And that would be?
Relishes, chutneys, and chow chows.
All right.
It's the time of the year when the garden has slowed down and things need to be put away for the winter. And so we'll talk about that. See if we can find out the real difference between chow chow and relish.
All right. We will see
you
the first Wednesday of October.
And that was a
caller
that called me and asked for those recipes about that. So we do pay attention to those people that pay attention to us.
All right.
Thank you.
Doyle Moore, our official, unofficial, whatever you call it, chef in residence, stops by here every month, always the first Wednesday, 10 o'clock. We talk about cooking, and he will be back again in October. Our program here is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, Homemade Pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Creative Crafts, Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Nackies, the Bean Scene Cafe, and Prairie Fire Glass, all housed in the same buildings in downtown Monticello. The broadcast is also made possible by Eastern Rug Gallery, offering a wide selection of guaranteed hand-knotted Oriental and Persian rugs of every size and color combination, from new to antique, to complement any decor. Eastern Rug Gallery, 1402 South Neal in Champaign. A little bit later today, Celeste Quinn will be talking with writer Kristen Henderson. She is a Quaker, a pacifist, who happens to be married to a chaplain in the Navy. He shipped out with the Marines to Afghanistan after the terrorist attacks of September 11th. He has also served in Iraq. Kristen Henderson is the author of a memoir about her life during her husband's service. It's titled Driving by Moonlight, A Journey Through Love, War, and Infertility. And she will be talking with Celeste Quinn in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine today. So hope that you'll stay tuned. Coming up in the next part of the show, we'll be talking with Todd Tucker about his book Notre Dame versus the Klan, which looks at a clash that took place between the Indiana Ku Klux Klan and students of Notre Dame University back in the 20s. We'll have news right now, though, an update on the markets.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
And now with this update on the markets at 10:59, I'm